sound you hear is what some experts claim to be a Bigfoot scream. It is regarded as the highest quality audio of the creature ever captured.
Colony. Men fought and died for freedom's sake. Against all odds they overcame, so we could be here today. White supremacy! A fallen nation would rise again and lash out against the beast, but their fight they could not sustain. On a night by the firelight, formed a brotherhood against our racial death. For our future they swore an oath, they fought till their dying breath. But this time there'll be no defeat, no rest until all complete fulfillment of our destiny, of dominion and supremacy. Burn the tears in flames, hang the traitors of our race. Judgment day is here, the hand of God is in its place. Drive you out and cut you off, your blood will surely flow. Avengers of the innocent, the earth will soon now know. White supremacy.
Report. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Crypto Report. We are recording this episode of the Crypto Report on March 26, 2018, but you're probably listening to it on the 27th or later. I have an extra special guest returning back to the show for, I can't remember if this is the second or third time. I know he's been on at least once before. It seems like a couple of times, but it's my good friend. Well, it's been at least two. It's Lee Rogers, because the Charlottesville show counts. And you were one of my co-hosts on the Charlottesville show. Say hello to everybody, Lee.
Hey, man. How's it going? Thanks for having me on again.
Well, thanks for coming on. It's it's been a while since I've done a regular show. There's been a regularly scheduled show. And, of course, this isn't a regularly scheduled one. This one will be coming out on Tuesday or Wednesday. But there's been a lot of really weird stuff going on in what, for lack of a better word, I guess we'll call the movement, you know, the alt-right, whatever it is. And I've been really preoccupied with that and have been working hard with the Stormer Book Clubs. We'll talk a little bit about that during the show, some of the stuff the Stormer Book Clubs have been up to. But I guess we should just get started off. I know you were really busy, so you weren't paying all that close attention to it, but I don't think you could actually just even be a person who's interested, even tangentially, in the alt-right and not have seen the things that have gone on over the past couple of weeks. We had a schism, I guess you'd call it, and it's been a long time coming. It was this thing where the alt-right rose starting around 2015. It got huge during the Trump campaign, and then Trump won. And then we had 2017, and things kind of went off the rails. You want to give a few thoughts on how things initially started going off the rails?
Well, it seems to me like after Charlottesville, there's been, I guess you could say, some differing viewpoints as far as how we should be moving forward, specifically as far as like tactics, strategy, branding and marketing goes. And you have some people who believe that we should be out in the streets doing all sorts of marches and things like that. You got other people who think that we should be focusing more on doing online stuff and doing, I guess you could say, more like flash mob type activism and things like that. So there's definitely been some disagreements as far as how we should move forward. And I don't think there's anything wrong with disagreements, but one of the things I noticed is that with this schism or this fracturing in the movement is that there's a lot of people who seem to be obsessed with these differences that we have. So technically, I think a lot of us, we agree with like 90-95% from a political perspective as far as what we want to see happen. But there's a number of people who are obsessed with the 5 or 10% that we disagree. And they want to focus 100% of their energy on those disagreements. And that's just been, at least from my perspective, what I've been seeing happen, and especially over the past month. I think over the past month, we've really seen this kick into high gear.
Yeah, and if I may characterize this with a cliche, what I see coming from the people who are so upset that we might criticize the in the streets crowd is this tendency to insist upon doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result every time, when you basically get the same result every time. I'm not against doing IRL action, actually getting out there in the streets. The thing is, I'm against the way that it's being done, and I'll tell you why. The way that the people on the other side of this argument have been doing these things is you go and you use your constitutional rights to force a rally on some city somewhere. You know, you get a permit and you take over a part of the downtown area. You require that the local taxpayers pony up to provide police protection for you. And then you show up out there in weird uniforms with either Photoshopped flags, are flags that you designed on Photoshop that represent whatever organization you're in, or, you know, Third Reich imagery, that kind of thing, with guys in black uniforms who are behaving in a way that I saw when I was young. And that what happens is you announce it ahead of time. So you way ahead of time so that you can get as many people to show as you possibly can. You get, if you're lucky at these things, you get 100, maybe 200 people, you know, just based on the estimates I've heard. I don't know that I've seen that many, but you know, whatever, I'll take their word for it. And during that time from when you announce to when the event happens, and then you have all these organizations who go into gear and they get all the dedicated Antifa and BLM. And on top of that, they hire bums and all kinds of people to come, and they bust them from all over the country. They get you outnumbered 10 to 1. They shout you down. They make you look bad. They make it look like that whatever it is you're doing has no support among the American people, which it really doesn't. I mean, when you get out there and you're saying, you know, you're not flying American flags, you're flying this alien looking stuff, and you're looking like, for lack of a better term, I'll just keep saying, you're looking like Derek Vineyard from the first half of American History X, basically the stereotypical Hollywood movie neo-Nazi. It's just, in my opinion, it's a bad thing. And I'll tell you why. It's not because I'm sitting here, being an optics cuck saying, oh, well, you know, I don't think American people like this. It's because this has happened before. It was called White Nationalism 1.0, and it was going on in the 80s and through a good part of the 90s. And it turned me off as a young man, as a passionate young racist man. I remember, you know, one of the big ones they had was this gathering of the nations, or whatever they called it, where they had Aryan nations and all the Klan and everything come to Vidor, Texas, when they tried to force a black person into public housing in this city of Vidor. And they got thousands of people came, and it was covered in Rolling Stone, just pages and pages of glossy photos of what was going on. And I looked at that and I was like, man, I don't want anything to do with these people. I don't want to join up with that. And, so now we're doing it again. And I think this is where, you know, a lot of people have pointed out that this isn't good. The thing that had the alt-right going so well is that it wasn't this movement of these super serious neo-Nazis and, you know, anti-American types. It was, you know, an upper middle class, or not even upper middle class, just a middle class. And of course, there were a lot of people that were you know, from poor demographics and wealthier demographics, but it was a middle American thing of whites waking up, being aware of the JQ, being aware of how they were being sold down the river by both parties, coming up with the awesome memes, backing Trump, which of course, as we'll get to in later on in the show, hasn't worked out all that well. But, and then Charlottesville happened, like you said, and somehow this is a justification for taking this movement that was on the rise and turning it into this thing that has never worked. What are your thoughts?
One of the things that stuck out on me was watching some of the rallies that occurred post-Charlottesville. And one of the recent ones, it was the one up, I think, in Michigan State University, where you had Richard Spencer speaking. And I was just looking at the video and the pictures from this event. And I mean, obviously, since I followed this stuff closely, I could tell who was who and what was going on. But to me, the average person looking at that, like, they're not going to be able to tell who is the anti-fascist and who's the nationalist. I mean, they all look the same. So I was looking at this, and just from a marketing perspective, I mean, because let's face it, I mean, we're trying to market and we're trying to sell our ideas to as many people as possible, because that's the only way that we can achieve political power and actually change things. And the average person looking at this shit, they're just going to be like, I don't want to be associated with either of these groups. They look the same. They didn't look like any average person walking on the street. And it just had this whole, I guess you could say, this look that is just very off-putting. It's not something that's going to attract a lot of people to want to join our nationalist movement. It's just not. So that was one of the things that really stuck out to me when I saw that. And I just don't think it's a winning strategy. As you said, if this is such a good idea, how come it didn't attract a mass movement of people over the past 30 to 40 years?
Yeah. And going back to that, you know, about just, I mean, the only, nobody can really explain to us why it needs to be done. I mean, they, you know, they'll quote Goebbels and say, you know, he's got the quote, which is absolutely true. And I'll explain why it's true. One of his most famous quotes is, who controls the streets controls the government, right? And that's absolutely true. And it has nothing to do with fighting in the street with Antifa, because let me tell you, nobody on either side of that fight, no matter who wins it, no matter how clearly or decisively they win it, controls these streets. The people who control these streets are the police. And the police are the people that the government, who controls this nation, have chosen to control those streets. Whatever happens on those streets happens either because of the police action or inaction. You know, whatever they want, whatever the people who control the police want happening on these streets is what's happening on these streets. It doesn't matter if you get out and have a fight in it. But as far as the IRL stuff goes, yeah, I think we need to be doing that. But what we need to be doing is positioning ourselves to do it properly. One IRL thing that we've been doing is we just had a nationwide flyering. We've been organizing the Daily Stormer book clubs for a couple of months now. We have a nationwide network of them, and we went out and did a flyering from coast to coast, which got featured in a lot of Jewish, international Jewish press. It was in Haaretz. It was in Times of Israel. And it was in regular press over, you know, Clark College in Washington State got so triggered by these pro-gun flyers that were pointing out that Jews are taking our guns, and you know, made mention that these European-style socialists that Wayne LaPierre of the NRA talked about were all Jews, that they had, like, a whole campus-wide roundtable type thing. You know, everything stopped, and they had a big discussion to assure the students that they were all safe from this wrongthink. So that's one kind. Another kind is the flash mob demo, which, if you choose your target properly, is extremely effective. The best example of that I can think of right now is the one that I did with Patriot Front and the guys from the DFW Stormer Book Club down in Houston at the Houston Anarchist Book Fair, which we timed to happen as Kit O'Connell, big Antifa blogger out of Austin, was giving a lecture, a workshop called Punching Nazis, a Guide to Anti-Fascist Activism. And it explicitly, it was talking about not only the history of violence against people that they call fascists or Nazis, but it was advocating that, yes, literally go out there and punch Nazis. And by their count, they had over 300 people inside, and their security was Redneck Revolt. You know, these super claiming to be violent badass Antifa who go around with their rifles and stuff, and myself and about 30 guys, like I said, from Patriot Front, and my guys from DFW Storm Book Club, and I think a few guys from pool parties and such. We had Houston Goilers, I think that's a pool party. About 30 of us show up, and these 300 people barricade the doors and hide, and it got all kinds of press. We did it on a live stream, which made it really exciting, because I started the live stream before we even got there. I explained on the live stream, okay, this is what we're doing. You know, so it builds up suspense. What's going to happen? And we jump out and roll out, and you see what happens when these people aren't prepared and they aren't 10 to 1 on you. They're afraid to come out and confront you. It was great propaganda. And another thing that we're going to be doing, and, you know, we constantly have our feelers out for things that are going to go on. When these people go out and they announce some big anti-American event that they're going to be having, some demonstration or whatever like that, we just suddenly show up, you know, and counter demonstrate that thing. And that's the kind of in real life activism that I think we need to be doing. But the thing everybody doesn't understand about this is when you talk about IRL activism, you're still talking about internet activism, because the internet, for better or worse, is the real world now. And it does you no good to get out and do some kind of street activism if you can't amplify that by having it on the internet. And if you're going to have it on the internet, you want to have victories. You want to have things that, embolden your people, that charge them up, that make them want to get involved, that shows the enemy for what they are, a bunch of sniveling cowards who don't have any real convictions or any guts. And to do that, you know, we have to show the American people who we really are. And I don't believe as a movement that we are these anti-Americans. And that gets to another thing that we're talking about here. I'm sorry for going on so long. I do have a great guest, and I'm going to let you go for as long as you want here in a second, Lee. But the American nationalism thing. Now, you know, this thing has been, and I think badly described as a rebranding or whatever. And a lot of people have accused us of becoming CivNats or whatever because of it. But the only thing that's a rebranding about it is that we changed the banner on the website. We've always been about American nationalism. That's always what I've wanted. I don't want to turn America into, you know, some LARPy version of the Third Reich in the 1940s. I'm an American, and I'm a white nationalist, and I truly believe these things that we're talking about. I've always believed them. America was founded as a nation for white people. And this doesn't change any of the things that I believe or that we believe. Our foremost problem is the Jew. And it wasn't just German national socialists who ever thought this. They got their ideas from people like Henry Ford and Madison Grant. And, you know, we've got to deal with that problem. We've got to eliminate the Jewish influence from our society. We've got to turn America back into a white country. I'm not pushing this stupid baseball, hot dogs, apple pie, and Chevrolet patriotism of the boomers. I'm pushing real based American nationalism. That's what we're doing at Daily Stormer. Now I'm going to shut up and let you go for a little bit, Lee.
Yeah. So, I think, that's a lot of interesting stuff there. One of the things that I would encourage people to do is to check out Ben Garland's article on American nationalism. That's up on the Daily Stormer. In fact, I think he's going to be doing a 2-part series on it. But I think his article really describes a lot of the stuff that you were talking about as far as what American nationalism actually is and a lot of the history behind it. Because as you said, I mean, if you look at the founding documents and you look at what this country was founded on, it was a country founded by and for white people. That's just an historical fact. So I don't understand why there is this push by these people to try to claim that we're somehow pushing civic nationalism and that we've compromised our political philosophies and ideologies. I mean, it's a total lie. We're talking about the exact same things that we've been talking about for the past several years. I've been personally running for the Daily Stormer since 2014, and the messaging on the site has not changed. It's the same thing that we've been talking about for the past several years. And this idea that we're promoting civic nationalism now, it's a bunch of nonsense. If you look at the Daily Stormer, there's a full section dedicated to the Jewish problem. There's also a full section dedicated to race war. I mean, these are things that you do not see civic nationalists talking about. They avoid the whole concept of race. They avoid the whole concept of the Jewish problem. They don't talk about any of these things. But these are topics that are actively talked about on the Daily Stormer. And American nationalism, it embraces these things that are on the Daily Stormer as far as, okay, well, we have to do something about these subversive Jews, and we have to get rid of this whole multicultural concept that's been promoted by the Jews, and we have to return to a situation where America is a white country, that it's controlled by whites for whites. So I think a lot of this stuff with civic nationalism, it's something that people are pushing because they have their own agendas and they have their own ideas as far as what they want to do with the movement. And I think a lot of the talk about it is highly disingenuous.
Well, yeah. And disingenuous is really a kind word for it. The people who are doing this fall into several camps, in my opinion, and it's up to the reader of their comments and such to discern in their own judgment which of these camps they fall into. You know, first of all, you've got a hardcore of people who came into this movement early on, who are not in it to win it. They're in it as like a subculture, and they don't want it to get big. It's just like, you know, say you have some subculture like the goths in the 90s, right? The last thing in the world they would have wanted would have been for everybody to become goths, because the reason that they were dressing up like satanic fags and doing the things that they were doing was because they were purposely trying to be edgy. They were purposely trying to other themselves from the society that they felt rejected them. And, you know, they were living off of that we're superior because we're other than them. That's not what we're into here. What we're into here is we want to normalize. And I'm going to use a term that a lot of people don't like being used for us, but I'm going to use it correctly. We want to normalize the idea of white supremacy in America. And by white supremacy, I mean what it literally means. When people talk about supremacy in this context, they're talking about political hegemony. And so even if you're a person who is totally into the idea of democracy, then you would have to agree with that, because historically and even now, whites are the majority of the United States, which is allegedly a democracy. And if the majority does not hold political hegemony in a democracy, then is it even a democracy? And that's not me endorsing democracy. That's me saying America is a white country and whites should be in control of it. We should be by far the super majority of it, you know. I mean, super duper majority of it. And until 1965, that was actually the law. But then you have these other groups of people. You have the LARPers. Okay. And there's some crossover with that first group of people that I'm talking about who just want an edgy subculture. But you've got these LARPers who probably legitimately believe that if they quote Mein Kampf often enough, if they post enough swastikas, and argue in enough broken German that they're getting from Google Translate and shit like that online, that somehow is going to win people over. Well, there's either something wrong with your mind if you think that that's the case, or you have lived in this internet bubble, which is a very real thing. You know, you can get into an internet, and I've been in it myself before too, where you can get into an internet bubble where you're only interacting with other people who agree with you. And it makes you believe things about the world in general that are not true. And then you have the more sinister types. You have these entryists who aren't necessarily, on board with what we're doing, but that they're modus operandi is to pretend they are and to infiltrate larger groups to try to influence these groups to do things that fit their agenda. And then right alongside them, you have the subverters being of several types. You've got the JIDF types, you've got the Antifa types, and you've got the feds, actual active feds, who will pretend to be us and who will say and do provocative things for various reasons. You know, with the JIDF and anti-white type provocateurs, it'll be to get to both by their posts and by the responses that they get to their posts, and hopefully by the influence that they're able to exert on the communities, that they keep us looking ridiculous. They keep us from doing anything productive and moving forward. And with the feds, there's a little bit of crossover with that. You know, COINTELPRO had a lot to do with promoting people who had the war, you know, in the 60s with the hard left communist type groups, and 70s, promoting the leader as leaders and such, the people who would completely derail the movements, making them look bad. But also posting provocative things online and getting people to respond so that they can come up with, you know, oh yeah, this guy's dangerous. Look what he said. And that guy's dangerous. Look what he said. This whole forum's dangerous. Look what they said. Let's backtrack them and get warrants and all, you know, to surveil them and that kind of stuff. So there's all kinds of reasons that this stuff goes on. And people who are honest, pro-whites, you know, whatever faction of the alt-right or the nationalist movement, pro-white movement, whatever you want to call it, that they feel that they're in, they get drawn into these things because these are psychological operations and they're well-tuned. They've had tons of research behind them, lots of money poured into the research. They've had decades to do this stuff, and you've just got regular honest guys out there who are getting influenced by this stuff. And I don't know, other than talking about it like we're doing right now, I don't know what the solution is, but people really need to check that stuff out. And there's a post that's like a pinned post over on the TRS 50 forum that lays out the exact strategies. I believe it's taken from a handbook, some type of government handbook on disrupting these forums. And I'll link to that in the post with this show. But these people fall into all these different categories. And the worst thing that we can do is allow our movement to be derailed by that, which I think to a great degree, certainly not beyond redemption, but to a great degree, it has been. Now, we are still growing. The readers of Daily Stormer and the listeners of TRS and all the listeners of this show is still going up. But less and less people are willing to, you know, publicly say, you know, proclaim I'm alt-right and all, and who can blame them? I mean, after the way things have gone over the last year, and we just cannot allow our forums and our social media platforms and everything to become fertile ground for these JIDF, these LARPers and these feds who, whether they intend to or not, are all working in concert to wreck this movement. Your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think you said it really well. And, you know, it's interesting. You see this type of thing happen with any sort of movement that isn't in the mainstream. You oftentimes, with these movements that aren't mainstream, it attracts an element of people who are, I mean, for the lack of a better term, there's something off with them. You get some crazy people that want to be a part of it. So I think there's some element of that as well. But I mean, all the things that you described, I saw the same stuff happen back in the 2000s with the 9/11 truth movement. And it was interesting how you would see that these people would come in and they would come into a group of people who agree that, yeah, there's some questions about the 9/11 attacks and let's see if we can get to the bottom of what's going on. And they would inject a specific theory as far as what they believed happened. And if people didn't 100% agree with that theory, they would try to start fights among different people and different organizations and groups that were part of this to try to stir up dissent and to make the whole movement look foolish. And we're seeing a very similar thing happen with the nationalist movement today. And it's obviously it's a little bit different because it's not like the 9/11 truth movement, but I mean the tactics that are being used to derail the movement is very similar to what I saw in the 2000s. And I'm not sure what the answer is exactly, but I think the one thing that is really key to understand is that you could accuse anybody of being any sort of things. Like you say, okay, that person's a fed, that person's whatever. But I mean, to me, what you should do is you should look at the person's contributions as a whole. If the person is contributing something that's positive to the movement and doing positive things, then you should look at that and say, okay, well, this person is doing something that's good and I should trust this person because of the body of work they've contributed. When you see these people that just come in and haven't contributed anything of substance, but are acting like they have all the answers and trying to divide people as far as, okay, well, if you don't agree with me 100% on branding, on strategy or tactics, then you're X, Y, and Z. You need to immediately disregard those people. You have to judge people based on body of their work. Otherwise, I mean, you're going to be going crazy trying to figure out, okay, well, who's on the up and up and who's doing good stuff and who's this and who's that. And it just takes too much energy to figure out. So I like to look at what people are contributing to judge their value as far as what they are contributing to the movement and how good of an asset they are for the movement in general.
Yeah, absolutely. And I might also add, you know, and I don't disagree with what you said or the use of the term, but I want to put a qualifier on that when you said, you know, look at what they've done and decide if you can trust them. You know, by this trust, I'm not like demanding that anybody like trust me, to be some kind of a leader of anything or anything like that. I've never asked for that. And that's where a lot of this, backlash comes from. And I'm not just talking about me necessarily, but I can only speak for myself, is that, you know, we get these critiques of us, that are like, this guy can't be the leader because X, 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 and X. And I'm like, you know, do you see me running for office, or do you see me saying, you people need to make me your leader? You know, I haven't done that. I'm a guy who has an opinion. I'm a guy who has a microphone, a show with some listeners, and I write for Daily Stormer. And I'm really involved with the Stormer book clubs, trying to get that all organized and everything. But I'm not trying to get anybody to elect me Fuhrer. I don't think I'm qualified for that. And even if I were, I fully admit that I have a past that basically disqualifies me from it. But because, you know, once you tried to push somebody like me on the normies, they'd be like, oh no, look at this guy's mugshots, you know, and all that shit. You know, so, but that's a really, really dishonest line of attack that people try to come at us with. You know, we can't trust this guy to be our leader. You know, I mean, I think the trust that we're talking about here is, I think, you know, you have to decide whether you can trust that what we're telling you is what we really think. Because, I mean, I've seen some crazy stuff out there, especially on Gab over the last few days. I mean, there are people who have these whole conspiracy theories about us. Like this one guy, you know, he's talking about, well, you know, they had this plan where first they would present as good Nazis and they'd get us all on board. And then they would wreck the entire movement by turning it into this crazy CivNat American nationalist thing. And Ricky Vaughn's behind it all. And who knows who else? And it's all really crazy stuff. And this thing about Ricky Vaughn, if I could touch on that for a second, because it seems to be like the touchstone. These people keep accusing us of conspiring with Ricky Vaughn, that Daily Stormer takes its orders, marching orders from Ricky Vaughn and all that. That is the craziest thing. Daily Stormer has never even been associated with Ricky Vaughn. The only and that's not to say I don't like the guy. I mean, I don't know him personally, but I've like followed him on social media for a couple of years. And I think he's been a net positive, to the alt-right. He definitely was during the Trump election. But I had him on my show once when the controversy first started, because he was attacking, you know, trolling people on Gab, calling them Wignats and this and that. And people started accusing him of being a civic nationalist and all. I had him on my show. I had him on, I can't remember if it was a full 2 or 3 hours. It was one or the other. And all we did was discuss, ideology. And while he may have pushed presenting as a civic nationalist, this or that, we pretty much came to the conclusion that he's not that. He's not for the Jews. He's not for this idea that everybody should just be able to come here, and no matter who they are or what they are, as long as they can get here, then we should give them some citizenship papers and teach them the Constitution, and they're just as good an American as Thomas Jefferson or whatever. That's not what he's about at all. And I'm not going to sit here and defend him. But the thing I'm pointing out is that, is, you know, other than maybe he's a member of the BBS and comments on the BBS sometimes, that is the only connection that Daily Stormer has ever had with him. And I started taking a lot of flack because I had him on my show and I didn't scream at him that I was going to throw him in a gas chamber and all this. And, you know, the people who think that they can dictate who's going to be on my show, or who think that I should only ever have people on my show that I disagree with, are going to be very disappointed, because I do like having people on my show that I completely agree with. I've got one on here right now, and it makes for a great show, but I would, if I could get more of them, I would dearly love to have people who disagree with me that I could get on this show, and actually, you know, have a back and forth, you know, not necessarily a formal debate, but, you know, an informal debate with them, because I know that I'm right. I would like to allow this type of debate on my show, because I know that if I'm any good at expressing our ideas, that our ideas are going to win out because they're correct. And so, you know, this whole idea that we have to just be this insular thing and only have guests that every single person whoever posts a reply under the show or something is somebody that they would want to go have dinner with or something like that is ridiculous, and it's not going to happen. And, you know, if you don't like the show when I do that kind of thing, then all I can do is suggest that, well, you know, go ahead and don't listen if you don't want, or go ahead and write those comments under the show about how I'm going to be responsible for the destruction of the white race because I had microchip on or something like that. But, it's just not happening. I guess I'll throw it over to you there.
Yeah, no, you touched upon a lot. Yeah, you're right about Ricky Vaughn. I mean, he has absolutely no link whatsoever as far as writing articles or doing anything editorial-wise on the Daily Stormer. I mean, that's just an absurd theory that people have been throwing around. I mean, I've heard all sorts of crazy stuff over the past month or so, just looking at some of the things that have been going on social media and on Gab in particular. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to say exactly why these people are doing all these things. I'm sure they got different agendas and different things going on. But, you know, like I said before, I look at these people who are putting out all these theories and creating all this dissension, and usually it's people who have not contributed any sort of real work to the movement. They don't have any sort of website. They don't have any podcast, or they've really contributed nothing. All they're doing is just posting shit on social media. That's the extent of their involvement. So it's really hard for me to take people like that seriously when that's all they're contributing to the cause. And look, I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. If that's the only thing that you can do or the only thing that you want to do, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. But I mean, when you're throwing these accusations out there like this, trying to create this big issue or making a big thing out of something that is relatively minor on the grand scheme of things, like I was saying before, you know, okay, so you agree with us on like 95% of everything we talk about, but you want to make a big deal out of the 5% that you disagree with us on. I mean, that to me, it just shows that there's something going on here that's not right, and you're just doing this to stir up trouble. And the fact of the matter is that if you think your strategies and your tactics and your ideas are so superior, there's nothing stopping you from setting up your own platform, doing your own podcast, starting your own organization. And if your ideas and your strategies are that much better than what we are doing, then I'm sure they'll win out in the end, because you'll have proved us wrong through your actions that your strategies and your tactics were that much better. But these people aren't doing any of that. They're just talking shit on Gab. They're coming up with these conspiracy theories about us, and the whole thing is insane.
Yeah, it really is. And let me touch on that a second, because I have a good example of that that I think will just bring complete clarity to this. What these people want, and I think that they acknowledge to themselves in their own minds that they can't do what we're doing themselves, that, which, I mean, what they think they can do is that they can either tell us how to do it better than we're doing it, even though they can't do it in the first place, or they think that they can take what we have and make it better. And the example that I wanted to give is, you know, I just posted a few days ago the big article with all the pictures from the Operation Gun Grabbing Jew flyer campaign.
Yeah.
And I noticed a comment that a guy had put in. He was a guy who was really critical, telling us how these flyers aren't going to amount to anything because blah, 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 blah. And then he comes back, you know, he's arguing with somebody else on the BBS, and he comes back and he says, well, I offered to start a Stormer book club in my area, but they told me they're not interested because I told them that I'm not wearing any uniform and I'm not doing any meetings and I'm not posting any flyers. And I'm not doing any counter protests or any flash mob protests or any of that. But what I want to do is X, 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 and X. And he named off a bunch of things that, I mean, I don't, if I thought they were something, or if other people involved with the Stormer book clubs thought they were something that was such a great idea, I promise you we'd be doing it. And so I asked the guy, I'm like, why would you even be making a big deal about this? Of course we don't want you. You know, we have a program that we've set up. We've worked hard on it. We've brainstormed on it a lot. And, you know, we have a certain type of organizing that we do. There's a reason for these clubs and for having these meetings. There's a lot of reasons for them. And there's a reason for the uniform. There's a reason we do flyers. There's a reason we do these other things. So why would you want to come join our thing and call yourself Stormer Book Club, but refuse to do any of those things and just have your own agenda off there by yourself doing these other things that we don't do? Why wouldn't you just go and do those things and call it whatever you want? Why is it such a big deal that we give, lend our name to it? Well, the reason is because you know that without our name, it won't work. But what I'm telling you is, even if it had our name, it wouldn't work. But, you know, you, a lot of people want to claim that who are not Stormer book clubs have tried to claim that they were Stormer book clubs, so that because the name Daily Stormer being attached to it gets people interested. And, you know, that's all I can figure is, you know, they're like, well, I mean, I've got all these great ideas, but they only work if Daily Stormer pushes them. You know, and the thing is, if those ideas would work, we would push the shit out of them.
Oh, I'm sure. And well, I mean, there's a lot of people like that. It just boils down to the fact that they know deep down that they can't do these things. So they just want to be a critic and they want to point out all these things that they think they could do better. But I mean, it's one of those things. I mean, it's easy to talk. I mean, it's a lot more difficult to actually take action and do things. And I think the results speak for themselves. I mean, the Stormer Book Club operation that you guys just did, it got a ton of mainstream press, got a ton of coverage. And if you have the mainstream press and these Jewish-controlled media outlets taking the time to mention you by name or mentioning something that you did, that shows that you're doing something positive for the cause, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I've had a few articles that I've posted. I didn't really think anything of it. And then one day I saw that the Israeli press started talking about some things that I posted about something that happened going on in Israel, their politics. And it made, I guess, the Jerusalem Post and a few other Israeli websites and papers. And when you know, when they mention you by name and they reference your work, that you're doing something positive. And I mean, these anonymous people who are being critics of all these things that we're doing, I don't think any of these people really have the gumption to do the things that we're doing. They don't want to put the time into it. They don't want to put the energy into it. And so they just want to be a critic. And it's easy to be a critic or a Monday morning quarterback when you're looking at all these things. I mean, none of us are perfect, but I'll tell you one thing. At least we're doing something. And I think we're doing a lot of positive things with not only the activism that the book clubs are doing, but also the articles, the podcasts, and everything else that we do. So, but again, I mean, you know, I just go back to the fact that if you really think that you can do something better, there is nothing stopping you from doing your own thing, set up your own operation, your own organization, your own podcast, your own website, whatever. I mean, it just takes a little bit of time and effort to do it. And if you don't want to go through and do it, then, I mean, really, I think that says it all.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm not even saying that the way Stormer Book Club does things is the only way to do things. I'm just saying that, you know, that's the way that Stormer Book Club is doing things. You've got guys out there who are doing things, some in a more similar way than others, but who are doing them differently, who are doing great work. You got Patriot Front out there. You got TRS organizing these pool parties and things. And, you know, I'm sure there are other groups that I'm not thinking of right now. And, you know, they're not trying to latch on to anybody else. They have firm beliefs, not only about their ideology and their politics and all that, but of, you know, how they want to implement those things. And I'm perfectly happy to support these guys and have supported these guys. I'm not one of them, but I'm happy to work with people like that and promote their stuff. Because they, you know, they're going out there and they're proving it. You know, there's a, I can't remember exactly where it comes from. I think it's from some old Negro soul song or something like that from the 70s. But the line goes, it don't mean nothing till you prove it all night long. And that really does apply. I mean, all this stuff that you're talking, you know, I mean, it's one thing if you're supporting people who are doing things, but if you're criticizing people who are doing things, well, fine. You know, I mean, I can take the criticism, but you ought to take that criticism and go and apply the things that you're saying should be done in your own life. You know, find these people who agree with you and go out there and do things. I support everyone in doing that. And that brings me to another point that I want us to discuss a little bit before we move off of this and talk about a little bit of normie politics. And by normie politics, I mean the type of stuff that you can hear about on Fox News and CNN. Instead of just this movement stuff, which I'm sure most everybody's getting sick of, but I know they want to, you know, they're interested to hear my take and your take on it because we haven't. Well, I mean, I've been in some of these threads slinging mud as I want to do when it gets slung at us, but you know, I haven't really given, you know, just sat and given my thought out, collected response to these things on the radio as I've done tonight. But that is the idea. That because someone is ostensibly pro-white, that no matter what they're doing or how they're doing it, we cannot criticize them. And this falls under catchphrases such as no infighting and never punch right. And what I have been saying and what I will continue to say is this is a bad idea. It's a bad policy. And at one time I was an adherent of this idea myself. And the reason being, when the movement was small, when it was just getting started, all anybody did was fight, which, I mean, I'm not saying it doesn't happen now, obviously, after what we've been talking about, but all anybody did was fight, and nobody had a real purchase on the culture. And you're like, man, let's don't all fight. Let's work together. Let's try to build a movement and all this. Well, the problem with this idea, especially now that we actually have the beginnings of a real movement going, is that this don't criticize anyone as long as they say they're pro-white. That only helps the lowest common denominator, and it damages everyone else. It's basically like saying, okay, you've got a professional basketball team. But you cannot criticize. And so you may have a guy on the team who is crippled and in a wheelchair, but he has to be allowed to go out there and play every bit as much as the guy who was the top basketball player in the NCAA, right? It doesn't make it, you know, you can't even say anything about it. And when you do that, you're providing to the public at large the idea that you approve of all these things. You're not presenting some kind of a unified front to them that makes them think, oh, well, they're just all trying to not criticize these people. No. Like, if we don't criticize the KKK going out in pointy hoods and screaming, look out, nigger, the Klan's getting bigger for every media outlet that'll come out. We can say, well, I don't think that's good optics. You know, if we say, oh, hey, everybody, look, the Klan, awesome, yay, then that's what we get branded as. That's how the media works. And if a thing is detrimental to us, and we see it as being detrimental to us, and we can't get any kind of influence behind the scenes about it, or it, for whatever reason, it just keeps going on. We have a readership and a listenership, and it skews very young. And it's our responsibility to let these people know we don't think this is a good idea for you to get involved in this. You know, there's a lot of reasons that we should be allowed to criticize, especially when we do so respectfully. And I will be the first person to admit that it hasn't been all that respectful these last few weeks. And I've been one of the people who wasn't all that respectful, but it was this whole shit show thing that devolved into personalities, which was a really, I mean, that was counterproductive. But, you know, shit happens. People get mad. But it didn't start off that way. It started off as criticism, very polite criticism on Daily Stormer, not of people, but of certain tactics and ways of doing things, and telling our readers that, you know, hey, we think maybe, you know, this is not the type of thing that we recommend you get involved with. And the people who were being criticized were like, oh my God, how can you attack us this way? And it's, you know, it's been going on for months, and hopefully it's all over now. Whether or not it is all over, you're not going to be hearing from me going on and on about this anymore. This has derailed what I've been doing. Just speaking for myself, it's derailed what I've been doing long enough. And it's time for me to start doing the work that I've been doing for several years now, where I'm doing positive work. I'm putting out good content and focusing on that, because I think we pretty much have got this thing settled. The people on the one camp can go to their camp and they can snipe at us all they want. I know I'm not going to let them do it on any platform I have control over, but they're welcome to do it wherever. I'm not even logging on to Gab anymore, because I just don't want to get into it with these people. And Gab has become a very ugly place. a lot of these people have been exiled from Daily Stormer and TRS, and they've all gone and gathered up on Gab. And it's just not something that I feel like participating in anymore. That's not to say I'll never log back on Gab again, but it's been too much of a time waster. And I need to focus on my work and what I'm doing. So that's where I'm at. Any thoughts you want to give on that, Lee, before we get to the news and all that?
Yeah, most definitely. I think one of the things that's interesting about what's happened is that you're right. I mean, there was some constructive criticism that was posted on the Daily Stormer about tactics, strategy, branding, and so forth and so on. And it was really interesting to see how a lot of people just flew off the handle, like it was some sort of personal attack on their manhood, because they disagreed with the strategies that were being promoted on the website, and they acted like it was like some real insult. And to me, that's some real feminine behavior when you do that. I mean, look, I mean, nobody is perfect. And if you can't take constructive criticism, then there's a real issue there. Because, I mean, I'll just give you an example. I mean, there's stuff that I've posted for the Daily Stormer that I want to get published up there. And there's sometimes that Anglin doesn't like something that I wrote, so he won't publish it because of some reason or whatever. And I don't go crazy and start crying about it, like, oh my God, you didn't post my article, this is the worst thing ever. I mean, give me a break. And that's the type of shit that we're seeing from a lot of these people, where it's like, okay, this minor criticism that we have, strategy, tactics, and whatever, a disagreement. Again, I go back to what we were talking about earlier, where, okay, there's like a 5% disagreement that we have. And these people want to focus 100% of their energy on that small disagreement that we have. And it's, again, it's very feminine behavior. I don't know how else to describe it. I mean, I've seen teenage girls act better than this when criticized on something. So this whole situation, I find to be completely insane. And it goes back to another point I want to make. And that's the fact that we're a bigger movement now. So we don't have to just invite anybody in to be part of our organizations and the things that we're trying to do. We want quality people. It's not about quantity. Because if you're just letting anybody in, like I'll give you an example. Okay, let's say that you have a business. Okay, and you're trying to bring employees into your business. Okay, I mean, are you just going to accept anybody off the streets to be part of your business just because this person will take the job? No, I mean, you want to bring in quality people, so those quality people will help your business grow and you'll be able to make more money. And it's no different with a political movement. We want quality people that can help push the movement ahead to the next level, so it will attract additional quality people, and then it will feed on itself and it will snowball to the point where it can actually make some positive political changes. So all these people that can't take any basic constructive criticism, polite constructive criticism, honestly, I'm not even sure that you're really much of an asset to the movement if you're going to become unhinged and go crazy because of the fact that there's a minor disagreement over something. You know, we should be communicating with each other like men. And if there's a disagreement, okay, let's hash it out and let's come to an agreement on what is the best way to move forward. And if you can't come to an agreement, well, then go your separate ways. And then you do your thing and we'll do our own thing. This shouldn't be a complicated thing, but unfortunately, it's just something that comes with territory when you have these political movements that haven't quite yet reached the mainstream. Just something that we have to work through.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess I will... my final word on this for myself is that I intend to be totally non-hypocritical about this and always have been. Now, if you criticize me, I may not agree with your criticism. And if I feel like your criticism is bad faith criticism, I may respond aggressively to that. But you have never heard and will never hear me say, I'm pro-white. We're on the same team. You are not allowed to criticize me. That you don't ever hear me say that. That's ridiculous. And if you have honest criticism for me, I'm perfectly willing to hear it always because I'm sure based on the quality of things I do, you might not be able to tell. But I'm always thinking about, you know, what am I doing wrong that I need to completely change? And what am I doing right that I need to improve on? I'm always thinking about that. And I may not agree with your criticism, but I often do. People will point things out to me and I'm like, yeah, you know, good idea. Good call. I'll remember that. So anyway, let's move on to the news. We've got about 10 minutes left. You agreed to come on for an hour tonight. And, you know, we're going to have a short show, which, like I said, when we were talking about it before, an hour of show is way better than no show.
Most definitely.
Which has been what people have been, which is what everybody's been getting from the Crypto Report for the last two or three weeks, I guess. It was no show. And I'll try to make up for that in the next few days. I'll see if I can't maybe do another solo show, maybe get another guest or so, maybe put out two or three shows in the next week or so. But I guess the biggest news going on right now is the whole budget thing. Well, I mean, there's the gun control thing, too, the march they had. We've only got so much time to talk. I think even a bigger thing going on right now is this budget that Trump just signed and the implications that it has both for all of his campaign promises and this stuff that he's talking about how he's got the wall funded despite the budget. And I have one of the best websites on the internet. I've got a couple articles pulled up here from infostormer.com. The first one is titled Trump Signs Awful $1.3 Trillion Omnibus Spending Bill. And you wrote, the president decided to sign this awful $1.3 trillion omnibus spending bill. He should have trusted his gut and vetoed it. This is one of the most ridiculous piece of shit bills ever passed by Congress. Earlier in the day, he said he was thinking of vetoing it. And here's his tweet, which the tweet itself says a lot about, you know, what's wrong with the way he's looking at this stuff. He says, this is a tweet from the 23rd, 7:55 a.m. I'm considering a veto of the omnibus spending bill based on the fact that the 800,000-plus DACA recipients have been totally abandoned by the Democrats, not even mentioned in the bill. and the border wall, which is desperately needed for national defense, is not fully funded. Well, I mean, look at the priorities right there. Right off the bat, he's considering vetoing it because it doesn't mention the DACA recipients. So as far as I can tell, that's the only good thing about the bill.
Most definitely. Yeah. I mean, you know, this whole idea that he's been putting out there that he can champion this DACA thing to try to get independents or maybe some Democrats to support him is ridiculous, because all of his political enemies hate him as a person. Like, they just hate everything about him. So it doesn't matter what he does with DACA or any of this other stuff. It's not going to bring him any more supporters. So really, this whole bill, this $1.3 trillion monstrosity, which is like, I don't know, it's like something like over 2,000 pages that he even admitted that nobody read. So why would you sign a bill into law that you yourself know nobody read? It's just completely ridiculous. But yeah, the whole DACA thing is just a stupid situation. And it didn't include any real solid funding for the border wall. I guess it included like, what was it, like $1.6 billion for some maintenance or something as far as the fencing goes or the existing structures that they have in place. But it didn't include the wall. So really this whole thing, it just alienates his base. That's all it does by him signing this. It just made no sense for him to do it. He should have vetoed it. He should have trusted his gut, because it did seem like he was conflicted with some of the things that he was saying, even during the press conference when he announced that he signed it.
Well, it also put limits on his constitutional authority to enforce immigration in the border. It actually placed a strict number limit on how many illegal aliens can be detained at any one time. And like you said, yeah, 1.6 billion. I was going to say 1.3, but you probably are accurate. It's probably 1.6 billion. And I believe they were saying that if that went 100% to building the wall, it would build like 30 miles of it or something, which is absolutely nothing. I mean, isn't it something like a 1700 mile border?
And I think it's like over 2000 miles or something. I mean, it's a long border, that's for sure.
I mean, the part of it that really needs walls. I mean, nobody ever was talking about building a full 1700 mile wall. I'm not saying that, but I mean, I think we should have a giant wall across the entire southern border. I personally think we should just take about 10 miles of Mexico and make that into a no man's zone and build the wall there. See what they do about it. But
that's one option. I wouldn't be opposed to that, especially all the drug traffickers and all the insanity you have going on the border.
Yeah, build it about 10 miles inside Mexico with another 10 miles on the other side of it that nobody's allowed to enter or they get shot, you know, by some type of a drone or something. But yeah, I mean, that and so there are so many bad things in this bill. It's just unbelievable. You know, you've got people like Chuck Schumer tweeting hashtag winning over and over and all that because they got this passed. It's the most bloated with pork bill that anybody's ever seen. Tucker Carlson made the comment the night it was signed. He said, "I'm sure the Range Rover dealerships in Washington, D.C. are just overflowing with customers right now, lobbyists and contractors who are congratulating themselves, you know, over this bill." And I mean, it includes things like, why are we sending millions of dollars for scholarships for Lebanon? And why are we sending millions of dollars to China for, I can't remember, it was some kind of development they called it. I mean, like something like $15 million going for yak herders in Tibet and things like that. I mean, China is overtaking us as the world's premier economic power, and we're sending them money. Not to mention that this is money that we borrow from them. So we're borrowing money from them to give them money.
And, it's insane. Yeah. I mean, it's 2000 pages of shit, and who the hell knows what else is in there?
Well, I mean, there's something like $13 million to promote female law enforcement officers in, I can't remember, I think it's Afghanistan. It's, you know, it's one of the either Middle Eastern or one of the stands. Yeah.
Good luck.
I mean, just all this crap. Yeah, just all this unbelievable crap. And like you say, every single campaign promise that he makes is broken in this. And this, he's considering a veto because of the DACA kids. Not one person voted for him because they were worried about the DACA recipients. And as a matter of fact, to sum up his policy on the DACA recipients before he took the oath, that he repeated over and over, not in these two words, but, you know, that he repeated over and over and over during the campaign, to sum it up in two words was fuck them. That was exactly, he was like, no, we're not going to do this DACA. This DACA is unconstitutional. These people are going to have to go to the back of the line. Remember? And suddenly he takes the oath of office, and it's a matter of the heart. And he has allowed this DACA business to drag on and on and on because he's trying to pull this boomer DR3 thing. Democrats are the real racists. And nobody gives a shit about that. The Democrats certainly don't care about it, because the only people who are going to believe that are people who vote straight conservative anyway. And those people are rapidly losing all influence over this country. And if this bill makes it so, I mean, a lot of people like Ann Coulter and Tucker Carlson, they're really blackpilled over this. They're saying, like, this bill is the end of America. And what they mean by that is it's the end of white America. Now, I'm not that blackpilled on it, but I sure don't believe it's going to help.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm that depressed over it, but I mean, it's not a good thing, that's for sure. I don't think it really helps them politically in any respect. It certainly hurts them, because this was not what anybody voted for, to say the least. But yeah, I mean, $1.3 trillion, and he's talking about how he signed it because of the military. That gives him $700 billion for the military. Well, I mean, we don't need any more Jewish wars. We don't need any more of this nonsense where we're the world's policemen. I mean, haven't we been doing that for long enough already? So, I mean, I don't think we need that much money for the military. A lot of that stuff could have been spent here in the States, like for the border wall and all sorts of other things. But yeah, I mean, this is not a good thing for us moving forward, to say the least. And I'm not sure what's going to happen in the next several months, but I guess Congress is, and this is like pretty much the last major legislation they were going to push this year. So, I mean, if I have to look to the future, it's not looking good for the Republicans as far as maintaining the House. They might be able to maintain the Senate still, but it's not looking good for them. And this was just a terrible thing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really bad. And one of the reasons that everybody was so hot to vote for Trump was because of the idea, you know, of the people who did vote for him, was because of the idea that this was the last chance. You know, that's why we got Republicans in charge of every aspect of the federal government. They're in control of the House. They're in control of the Senate. They're in control of the executive branch, the presidency, and now they're even in control of the Supreme Court. And this is what we get. We get everything that the Democrats want. We get everything that the hated mainstream Northeastern establishment conservative Republicans want. We get nothing that the middle America Trump voters wanted. And Trump signs it into law with no negotiation. And I mean, that was the other thing. He's going to negotiate. He's going to negotiate with Putin. He's going to negotiate with China. He's going to negotiate with the House and Senate. We're going to get great deals and all this. And we get nothing. And the only counterpoints that he's had to this is, like, he signed it, and before anybody even knew that he had the thing signed, he tweeted out, okay, I'm signing this crappy thing, but never again. We can never do this again, and so I demand that Congress give me a line item veto. Yeah, well, good luck.
Why was he demanding that before? Yeah, why was he demanding these things before? That's my question. Why is he at this press conference, and then he says, well, I'm signing this bill, but I want all these things, and the whole process was just rotten from the very start. And it really just came out of nowhere. This is just something that, you know, we knew it was happening, but it wasn't one of those things where it was like, okay, he's just going to go ahead and sign this. Like, there should have been some negotiation, like you said, and he should have been able to get a lot more than he got in his bill besides just military spending. Because, I mean, okay, if he said that he was going to veto it and actually went through with the veto, he could just say that, yeah, the Democrats weren't giving me anything. This is a rotten bill. It's 2,000 pages worth of shit. I mean, there are so many things that he could say that would justify the veto, and people would have fully understood why he vetoed it. So this whole thing has been a huge disappointment, and I don't know. I mean, there are some good things that I think have happened, like with the tariffs and things like that that he's been doing on trade. But, I mean, this whole past week was just really negative between this omnibus spending bill, the appointment of John Bolton as national security advisor, and then him talking about he put out a tweet about how he was going to get the Justice Department to ban bump stocks. Like, I mean, none of these things are going to do anything for his base. It's just going to alienate his base further. It's just insane what he's been doing over the past several days.
Yeah, absolutely. And not to mention a couple of points I'd like to make. You know, you said that he could have come up with some reason to veto this thing. Well, to my knowledge, and of course, I'm not like a constitutional scholar teaching at a university or anything, but I've read the thing and I don't remember reading in there anywhere where there's like this rule that when, the Congress submits a bill to him to be signed, that he has to either sign it or veto it within 12 hours. I mean, sure, the Congress and the Senate, they pushed it through, and this is a tactic they do. You know, they want to do it this way. They push these giant bills through, claiming, well, nobody has time to read them, so that when all the stuff starts coming out, they all get to say, I had no idea. I just had to vote on it, or, you know, the military would have gone broke the next day, and the Russians and Chinese would have invaded. You know, that's the kind of shit they want to pull. And but you know, he could have said, okay, well, my staff and I are going to go through this thing for about a week and have a look at it and see what all's in it before I sign this. And he could have started saying, hey, what's this in here for? You know, having press conferences, have, you know, give Sarah Huckabee Sanders something better to do than to go out there and argue about whether he banged Stormy Daniels or not. You know, get her out there saying, okay, get her out there saying, look, can you believe this is in this bill?
Most definitely.
You know, every day. And it could lead up to, you know, you could have about a week of that and then say, okay, I'm going to veto this bill after you have shamed the living shit out of everybody in the Senate over that bill. But instead, I mean, and nobody in the mainstream media even points these things out. Well, okay, maybe have you ever heard them say this? Anytime one of these bills passes and nobody had any time to read it, have you ever heard the mainstream media point out, well, you know, the president has time to read it if he wants to before he decides to whether to veto it or to sign it?
Yeah, well, I mean, during
that Congress?
Yeah, well, it was just funny when Trump did the press conference, he admitted fully that nobody had a chance to read it. So, I mean, again, why would you sign something that you know nobody has read? It's just the whole process has been completely insane. And I mean, I don't know. It's just business as usual at this point. And I mean, I don't know.
It's the swamp.
Yeah, it's like Trump has gotten consumed by the swamp. But I would just say that this past week, I think, has been probably his worst week as president. Maybe, well, you also had the situation in Syria a year ago. But I'd probably say that this has been the worst week of his presidency based upon everything that's happened. And I don't know. It's not looking good.
Yeah. And we've got John Bolton now as the, the national security advisor.
Yes.
So we've got somebody right in Trump's ear now who is going to, who, you know, with every word that comes out of his mustachioed mouth is going to be advocating for some war for Israel.
Yeah. He was a huge supporter of the Iraq war back in the 2000s. That guy was all over the place promoting how great the war was. And
to the end. And he still is. He was on Tucker Carlson last week and he was saying the only bad thing that happened with the Iraq Afghanistan war was the fact that we ended it.
Well, it's still going on. Well, technically both these wars are still going on.
Well, yeah, but I mean, we don't have like full occupation. You know, we had the whole place. We had our entire military over there doing just a full on occupation for what? 8 years, 6-8 years, something like that. And, you know, they drew it down. They called it ending it when they drew it down to, I don't know, whatever the number was, below 1 million troops or whatever. But I mean, he's saying that, you know, oh, well, the McCain surge was the awesome thing and we should have just kept doing these surges and sending more people and doubling down. you know, the guy is a mouthpiece for two interests. The one, and a lot of people will say they're the same interest, and I'm not going to argue that, but, you know, it's more complicated than that. One of them, first and foremost, is Israel, and almost equal is the military-industrial complex. And those are the two, the only two, really, beneficiaries of this policy of belligerent warfare in the Middle East constantly. I mean, the military-industrial complex just cleans up on that. And, of course, Israel profits from it in every possible way. It's good propaganda for them here, you know, because it's only democracy, our greatest ally and all that. But also, we're over there dying, you know, killing our own boys to destroy their enemies for them, and they don't have to raise a finger to do anything.
Yeah, no, that's really the main problem. I mean, all this money that has been spent, I mean, trillions upon trillions of dollars for these stupid wars over in the Middle East that have not been to benefit America, it's been benefit Israel. And I don't think there's anybody at this point who can actually deny that. I mean, that's just a 100% verifiable fact. And it's something that really has to end. And this omnibus bill that Trump just signed, okay, $700 billion for the military. And then he read off all these things that we were buying. Okay, great. But as you mentioned, who does that benefit? It benefits all these military contractors that get all this money to build those things. So it's like a circular thing that just feeds on itself. And we have to find some way to break this cycle. Because, I mean, you know, I see all this stuff about Russia. They talk about how Russia is like our greatest enemy now and how Russia's doing all these bad things. But really, when you look at what they're accusing Russia of, it's really the stuff they're accusing them of doing is really the stuff that Israel and all these Jews are doing. And that's something that I think really needs to be highlighted.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't care what the Keynesians say. And boy, is that a thing you don't hear anybody say anymore ever since the, you know, the Ron Pauls and so forth aren't around. But it's an accurate descriptor of this theory. I don't care what the Keynesians say. You cannot prop up an economy forever by breaking windows and replacing them. And that's what this is, this military-industrial complex thing of where, okay, we have a war over in the shithole of the world constantly because, you know, that wears out our tanks and our planes, and we use up all these munitions and on, 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 on. And so we have to build new ones, and that provides profit, and that gets workers paid and all. It doesn't work forever. It crashes in the end, because if you really think about it, it's a very circular thing. It's basically like trying to come up with a perpetual motion machine. You know, you can look at all these old, schematics of things people used to try to come up with to be perpetual motion machines. And sure, they'd turn for a long time, but they stop in the end. And when they stop, they fully stop. And this stuff is running on debt, and it just can't go on forever. And people get to thinking that it can because it's gone on for so long. But at some point, you've got to pay the piper. And, you know, it would be way better if instead of just carrying this on until we're past the point of even calling ourselves bankrupt and everybody's coming to call saying pay up, pay up, pay up, is that you cut expenses and you start having rational policies and bring some of this military home. And, you know, yeah, I'm sure the military does need money that I would be willing to give them, as far as, like, you know, we've just broken our military against the Middle East for 15 years now. And I would like to bring all the guys home, bring all the equipment home, repair it all, upgrade, update, have as much as we need for defense of, you know, our country, and maybe take these guys in the military and start deporting these illegals with them. I mean, we have anywhere between 10 and 40 million of them, depending on who you ask. And that seems like way more of a clear and present danger to me than anything that's going on over in Afghanistan.
Most definitely. Well, of course, you got all the stuff going on the border. And yeah, it's pretty interesting. They want to spend $700 billion in the military and almost nothing on securing the borders of the country that the military is supposed to be defending. And this has been going on for so long. It's just, it's such an insane thing. And I hope at some point that I will see the day when this cycle is finally broken. And I was hoping that Trump may have been the person to potentially do it. But with this whole thing, I have very little confidence that that's going to happen. It seems like a lot of the foreign policy moves that he's made, not all of them, but the vast majority of them have just been business as usual. And I think this $700 billion spending bill and all this other stuff is just more proof that, yeah, it's just business as usual for now.
Well, we're coming to a close here. You have graciously gone over the time that we agreed to. So I would like to get your opinion on this because, you know, it's every time Trump does bad things, you know, people start screaming, it's over. I hate Trump now. I never want to have anything to do with him again, blah, blah, blah. Do you think that he has any realistic opportunity to redeem himself after this? What do you think American nationalists, members of the alt-right and so forth, what do you think is a reasonable reaction to this? And should we write off our support of Trump completely?
Yeah, that's a tough question. I don't think that his presidency is irredeemable. I think there have been some things that he's done that have been positive. Of course, it's also been a lot of stuff that's been negative, but he's just one man. I mean, that's part of the issue that we have here. There's a lot of forces that are against him. There's a lot of forces that did not want to see him become president. And I think a lot of the things that he's done that have been most positive for us has been on the cultural front. Like, for example, the exposing of the fake news media, which is really just the Jewish media. He's completely discredited those people. The stuff with the NFL, as far as the national anthem stuff went and all that stuff. I think that was a very positive cultural win for us. And also just getting rid of this whole concept of political correctness. I think his campaign, his presidency, I think all that has done a good number on that narrative that they've crammed down our throats for years. So I think those things have been valuable. But yeah, I don't think his presidency is irredeemable. I think there's a chance that he's still going to do some positive things. But I just think it's going to be a mixed bag moving forward. I don't think we should expect all these tremendous things to happen. Like, I mean, there's some people out there that think that, okay, well Trump was going to be like the next Adolf Hitler or something. And I think most of us knew that wasn't what we're going to get. Trump is basically giving us time to hopefully be able to get our act together. And I'm hoping over the next 8 years to get a real solid pro-white base in place that can actually achieve some real long-lasting political change. So again, I don't think his presidency is irredeemable, but obviously I've been very disappointed with some of the things that have happened over the past.
Well, I don't think it's irredeemable either. I am ever more pessimistic. And like you, I never was a person who thought that Trump was going to be Hitler. Now, we did meme that kind of stuff a lot. There were a lot of reasons for that. Mostly it was, you know, harassing the conservatives and throwing the anti-immigration stuff in the face of the left. And also trying to energize our people in the alt-right to vote for Trump, which I believe was, you know, the deciding factor. We definitely weren't the biggest group of people that voted for him. But if you look at the numbers, had the alt-right not turned out and voted in huge numbers for Trump, he wouldn't have been president. You have to remember one very important thing. No matter what's going on, until it gets to the point that it would have been, if Hillary was elected, it's still better that we elected Trump. And you must remember, and this is not an exaggeration, had Hillary Clinton been elected, by now, we would already have every illegal alien in the United States made a full voting citizen. We would have anti-white programs like affirmative action, just ramped up by a factor of 10. We would have hate speech laws. We would have an end to borders as we know, even the time, you know, as porous as our border is, we would have a complete end to the border. We would have an open invitation to the third world for all of them to come here and live on our social welfare systems. Basically we would be like the entire United States would be London, but with Mexicans. And so that wouldn't be good. So I think what we have to do, I'm not saying we have to be behind Trump and everything he does. Obviously, I am very upset with him, with what he's done. I don't know. I do believe he can redeem himself. I don't know that he will. I believe that we need to put pressure on him. I think that for every, let's just throw a random number out there. For every 5 minutes that we spend online, complaining righteously, I may add, I'm not saying you're complaining for no reason. And I like that you're complaining online about this stuff. But for every 5 minutes that you're online complaining about this stuff, you should spend 1 minute sending him an email or calling the White House switchboard, you know, and not calling him up and saying, we're going to throw you in a gas chamber and turn America into the Third Reich and all that, or cursing him or threatening him or things, but telling him, I will not vote for you. I will not vote for any Republican if X happens. You've got to be an engaged citizen. We live, well, technically in a republic, but literally we live in a representative democracy. You know, that's what they want to call it. It's a democracy. And so we have to be engaged citizens. Just getting somebody elected is not good enough, because we have the media, we have the GOP and the Democratic Party, all the lobbyists, all the corporatists, we have all those vying for influence. And the only thing that we've got is our vote. And we need to make sure that Trump and his people and all our local representatives, all our congressional representatives, all our state level representatives, we have to make sure that they know that we're paying attention, we're engaged, we vote, and we don't feel they're entitled to our votes, that they have to earn them. And if we can be, if the alt-right can be the loudest voices in these emails and faxes and calls to the White House switchboard, the congressional offices and all that, then we can have a really, really huge influence completely out of step with our actual numbers.
Yeah, I mean, I think putting pressure on him is the right strategy. And I think when you look at just his response to how this whole thing has played out, I think he gets the sense that the base is not happy with some of these recent moves. And we'll see what happens. I'm not sure for it, but we should absolutely do our best to try to sway him in the direction that we want him to go and ensure that he fulfills what he promised, which I think most of the stuff that he promised were good policies that is going to at least help push the country in a proper direction. And clearly over the past few weeks or so, we've seen him veer away from that. And it's obviously unfortunate. So yeah, we just have to keep at it. And one thing I think that is worth mentioning is that we can't give up. We have to keep pushing our agenda as forcefully as we can until we get to the point where we can enact some real positive political change. And I think there's a chance that we'll be seeing at some point in the future, but we just have to work at it.
Yeah, and that's a good place to end this. And to finish up the show, I'd like to do a little shilling for you. And it's not shilling, because I actually mean it. Infostormer.com is a great website. It's owned and run. I just turned black for a second. It's owned and run by my guest and friend, Lee Rogers. Go check it out every day. It's a really hard news website, and he has some really acidic opinionizing on there that I really enjoy. And you really need to consider, don't consider it. Just do it. Get on the InfoStormer forum. Registration is open, isn't it, Lee?
It is. It's a smaller community, but I think that's why it's appealing. So yeah, the registration is open. You can sign up for an account, and there's people that comment on there.
Yeah,
fairly regularly. So it's a pretty
good community. If you're on the Daily Stormer BBS, you'll know most of them, and because it is smaller, you know, we can kind of. It's easier for us to keep it a friendly community, a positive community. So, you know, come on over there. I'm there all the time. You may not see me commenting a lot, but if you come on there and you tag me and want to talk about something, I will certainly talk with you. The registration is not open on the Daily Stormer BBS right now, I don't believe, but if you are a member and you haven't posted on there for a while, consider logging on and checking it out. I think you'll find what you see there right now refreshing compared to what you've seen for a while. Make sure and log on to the Daily Stormer several times every day. If you miss something that gets posted there, you're just going to be uninformed, because really, I mean, Daily Stormer and InfoStormer are the only places you're going to go and find real news all the time. So, Lee, I want to thank you for coming on here. You've been, as always, been a great guest. I know the listeners are going to really enjoy this. Hopefully we can do this more often than we've been doing it. And I'll be doing another show in a day or so. I'll be talking about some other things. I'm going to be talking about how Britain has become a complete thought crime enforcing police state. I'm going to be talking about the march against the guns and several other things. So keep watching that radio section over the next few days, because I'll be trying to make up for lost time in it. Until then, for Lee, I am Asmodor. This has been the Crypto Report, and we'll see you later.